people, and you've got to get people getting pushy.
Hear, hear. Get pushy. We've been polite too long. I mean, the gentlemanliness of this debate about saving the world.
Is it gentlemanliness or timidity combined with laziness?
Timidity, gutlessness, cupidity, ignorance, momentum, all those good values. Well, why don't we break for lunch and come back to this at 1:30? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is a wrap-up session. I'm going to have to leave at its termination. I want to express my special deep thanks to Nicole, who has performed gallantly and above and beyond the
vice
call
versa.
Of duty. Well, I'm a war horse at this, my dear. I feel like I led a virgin into a dance hall, but you dance very well.
Thank you.
I would like my fantasy is to see Nicole become the Mother Teresa of rainforest salvation. We'll keep her card playing and heavy drinking off the front pages and to sell her as Mother Teresa in green. But this is serious business that we're engaged in. And it is, on one level among ourselves, it is communication and sharing and opening and building consensus. But when we turn away from our family and out toward the uncomprehending or even hostile world outside, then it becomes propaganda. It becomes a struggle for the hearts and minds of people everywhere. And I think most people are with us. It's simply that they haven't had it explained to them in such a way that they were able to realize that. In other words, we're not out to convert anybody to anything. We're out to help people discover that they agreed with this point of view all along. It has to be so because, after all, we stand for something fairly simple and unambiguous. Life, survival, continuity, caring, relationship, feeling, joy. Who's going to vote against this if it's properly explained to them? So I view these things as consciousness-raising sessions in the old style and hope that you will see it as more than even privately inspiring entertainment, but that you will go out and get these points of view to people, get these attitudes out, not unto the greater glory of Terence McKenna or Nicole Maxwell or the Ojai Foundation, but because this needs to be said, it needs to be empowered. The first step towards solving any problem is an awareness that the problem exists. Now, we're all very tired of that because we've been suffering and agonizing over the problem of a dying earth, some of us for years. Nevertheless, the astonishing news is some folks haven't heard or have only heard recently. And it's very important not to panic them or alarm them, but to inspire them and motivate them and bring them into the project of reclaiming the earth. I mean, this is our legacy. This is our birthright. It is the legacy and birthright of our unborn children. And, you know, there isn't even, there maybe there is, but I don't know it. Rich as Greek is, there isn't a word for being so perverse that you devour your own children. The Maenads, the women possessed of Dionysic frenzy, what was always put against them was that they devoured their own children. This is a propaganda image that to be smeared with this is to be tainted very deeply. Well, it is literally true that we are guilty of a crime which the ancients could barely conceive. We are looting the planet for our pleasure. Our condominiums, speedboats, and electronic gadgetry is literally part of the legacy of our children. What kind of people comprise the larger society in which we are embedded that they would do a thing like that? It's a crime beyond war. War, you simply slaughter all the fools who volunteer for it and all the fools who stand around and watch. But to destroy the potential of a future for our children is a crime that boggles the mind. And this is the final stage of the dominator metaphor. When I picked up the New York Times a year ago and read that the United States State Department was advocating the spraying of aerial herbicides over the Wayzaga Basin to eradicate coca, to me, it felt like a turning point, comparable to the assassination of John Kennedy or Pearl Harbor. It was so clearly perverse, so clearly directed against itself. The contradictions become so odious that at a certain point, people of moral dignity feel they have no option left except to somehow throw themselves on the cogs of the machinery to try and halt it from carrying out the program of Moloch, the program of self-devourment that we have set in motion. Now, if ever there was a moment to talk to your neighbors, clarify your own thinking, support organizations that are trying to make a difference, now is the time. And we can make a difference. And I know you have heard that, and it's a cliche, and there's a tendency not to believe it. I'd been here, Botanical Dimensions was fairly narrowly focused until a couple of years ago on saving shamanic hallucinogens. Then, really through Kat's process, the need was felt to encompass this whole problem of destruction of the warm tropics. So I began writing letters to the UN and the IMF and the World Bank and all of these people, expecting to find a vast, well-funded edifice of typing pools and computer networks and people doing something. I discovered that very little is going on. We have advanced a long, long way down this path on yak alone. There is not somewhere vast organizations toiling to contact every Brazilian politician and put the twist on him, toiling to contact every American corporation that is contributing to this atrocity and threatening them with stock sell-offs, boycotts, and whatever. All the obvious things that you may think are being done, you may then dismiss by saying, well, I'm sure I shouldn't do that. Surely somewhere a staff of 50 is working on that problem. Well, when you look into it, you discover it is not happening. If any one of you has moderate or great wealth and have decided not to pitch in with saving the rainforest because you think a lot of people are working in that field already, forget it. The number of people waving their arms about it is legion. The number of people who are actually attempting to halt it is countable on the fingers of two hands. So, and every issue, I think, is like this. The gas weapons, the fight against formula over breastfeeding, all of these organizations piddle along on peanuts, absolute peanuts. If someone were to give me or the Ojai Foundation $1 million and say, do your good work, word would get out of the phenomenal generosity of this person. Imagine $1 million. Did you know that the standard issue Air Force fighter plane costs $120 million? One. And they line these things up on the runways of various airfields, 120 deep. We are completely paralyzed or unable to perceive the disparity in the way the money is spent. If someone were to give or had even the power to give, because private wealth is not like governmental wealth, if you're a private person and you control a fortune of $500 million, you are among the 1,000 richest people in the world. If you're a government with a budget of $500 million, you have your hand in everybody's pocket around the world because you're a beggar. If someone were to give to the New Age the price of one fighter plane, and half the governments in the world have dozens of these things, that $120 million would write a ticket to rebirth for every center in the state, all the movies, films, pilgrimages, conferences, conscience-raising, experimental programs of fringe scientific research, all of that would be prosecuted to a glorious end. The amazing thing is, we who have no money have all the ideas. If the cost of one fighter plane were spent on the promotion of ideas to save the world would probably advance 50% closer to its own salvation. So what is the matter with us? Why are we so perverse? What is it that drives the inertia of these dominator systems? Because we're not asking for half the military budget, not even close. And yet we're not being cut any slack at all. And it doesn't make any sense. People love to talk about the new freedom in the Soviet Union and how exhilarating it must be. My hope for the Soviet Union is that they shame us with the level of their freedom of discourse and their ability to look their past in the face and reassess where they are going. So this is not a plea for $1 million. This is a plea for consideration of the perverseness of the way we set our priorities. The world can be saved. It's simply a matter of diverting, I would say, 5% of GNP to do it. Well, only a terminally psychopathic person would refuse to divert 5% of their energy flow toward their own salvation. If we can't get our act together to do that, I think the calm and cool judgment of Gaia Almighty is, who needed such clowns? I'll hang out with the octopi, the dolphins, the butterflies, and the termite nests. I don't need this headache. I don't need acid rain. I don't need strontium in the environment. I don't need extraction of petroleum products and tons of junk in orbit in order to foster what? Shakespeare? There hasn't been a Shakespeare for 500 years. These clowns aren't producing anything. H-bombs don't make it in the Gaian scale of values. So the point here is tremendously perverse misdirection of resources, a tremendous patience with institutions that have proven that they are either ineffective or actually the enemy. Institutions like the Brazilian government, large pharmaceutical companies, capitalism, so forth and so on. Why are we so patient when our world, our children's world, the world of all future life on Earth hangs in the balance? I think that the time is really coming when people are going to have to stand up and be counted. And I hope when you leave here this afternoon that you will feel that our group experience has given you permission to come out of the environmental closet, the psychedelic closet, the caring for the fate of the human family closet, because all of these things are either dismissed as perverse, dangerous, or airheaded. And obviously, they are not. This is the most serious business that we could be about. This is what we were born to do. It must be, because if this is not what we were born to do, then what we were born to do is witness the death of the only living world we know. And I, for one, am not ready to stand mute witness to that kind of an atrocity. Do you want to add anything, Nicole, and then we'll take more questions? Anybody out here? We'll take questions now till around 3 o'clock. Daniel. Well, yes, I mean, we're sort of in a bind, a time bind. We now have many of these medically interesting or potentially medically interesting plants growing, but they're not yet large enough that we can make bulk biomass harvest for research. In the next 2 or 3 years, we hope to be able to do this. We are growing Castanospermum australis, which is a plant with a potential impact on inhibiting the AIDS virus, and we're beginning to supply a lab with that. Hopefully, Sangre de Grado will come on.
The Tababuya?
Tababuya. We're growing that, and we're hoping to create a scheme. We have that, the Uncarion.
Those are terribly important. I have seen them work. I have seen a man who was sent to Lima with cancer in a terminal, just no prognosis at all. I went over his medical records, and he had 10% cancer cells in the bloodstream. At the time, they came to him in the hospital and said, you know, the doctor said, "It's awfully sorry, but you've got to leave because you're going on strike tomorrow." And it was the biggest break he ever had. Some friends came to take him home, and the doctors told him, "He's got about 9 days left, he's dying now." They took him home, and they started him on this uña de gato and a few other things. The other things were he had a cystitis and a generalized septicemia as well. And in 2 weeks, he was walking around. The strike lasted 31 days, and the doctors were absolutely floored. They didn't believe he was the same person. When I met him, he was back at his original job. He was 54 years old, I think, or 58, which was teaching ballet and flamenco. And flamenco, I have done a lot of dance, and flamenco is the most exhausting thing I have ever attempted. And I've known him now for 10 years or so, and he's still fine. I took the director of the Siba Gagi Cancer Ontology Investigation Laboratories. He came over from Basel to visit his daughter, who's a friend of mine in Peru. And I took him to see him. He flipped. He said, "You've got to get me some of that stuff." After he examined the man, said he had one small node, totally inactive, on a bone, on one rib bone. He said, "You've got to get me some of that." I did. I knew where to buy it in Lima, and bought him a good quantity. And he took it with him. He said, "I've got to start research on this immediately." Then he had the nerve to write me and say, "You must never tell anybody about this." They hadn't even paid me for what I put out for the stuff I bought them. And I didn't ask them to. And I haven't heard from him since. And that is what I consider one well-established case with proper evidence. It is one of many I have run into who have told me about it, but I have not personally read their medical records from a cancer institute. And with things like that, are we going to let this all be destroyed? Are we going to just say, "Well, you know, that was one case," and of course it isn't one case, there are many. Aren't we going to insist on some real investigation in a public way, so that everybody knows what happens, and the results are not kept privately for one organization? That's murdering people. Because to keep that information secret, I think, would be a sort of mass murder.
Yes. Yeah.
A lot of your stories, Nicole, have involved, part of the players in the story have involved an encounter with a physician similar to the one you just told.
Yes.
And many of the stories make the physicians look muddle-headed.
No, not necessarily. They are muddle-headed. What physicians?
Perhaps that's the answer to my question.
It's not the physicians.
The question is, are there physicians in or around the jungle that are allies of your point of view?
There are a few. There are more and more coming in to do research on it. Not so much in this country. Germany. I have just been over there at the invitation of an institute that was founded by the wife of the president, who he was president until 1984. And she is an MD. They have now 44,000 members. They are testing things like that. In Germany, you can buy all these things, you see. They're offered to the general public, and physicians supervise their use in many cases. Why can't we? Why does it have to be kept secret?
What's your notion? What's the answer? Why is it being...
The answer is to get people saying, "That stuff's there, we want to see it researched." Why isn't somebody doing some clinical investigation?
And you say European...
You're in Rome. Doctor, I have his name written down somewhere. I brought with me his name. There's a man at the University of Rome who's working on this, and he's doing some very interesting work. I think it was he that established the low toxicity of Uno di Gatto, and which was, he found it to achieve any semblance of a toxic effect, they had to give more than 1 gram per kilo body weight of concentrated extract. That's kind of a high dose. And, but this country, no.
a good example or a good case that shows how all this works is the AIDS problem, which as soon as it was identified and they knew what they had on their hands, they took two directions. Some of these big pharmaceutical companies, it's called rational drug design, where you know what you want this molecule to do, and you design it